Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's tremendously important to remind people frequently that the issue here is freedom, because there's a big tendency to forget it. In fact, at this point, I'm going to talk more about the issues of freedom that are involved in free software. I'm going to give you the definition, the rough definition of free software. Because free software is a matter of certain specific freedoms. A program is free software for you, a particular user, if you have the following freedoms. Freedom zero is the freedom to run the program any way you like for whatever purpose. Freedom one is the freedom to study the program and change it to suit your needs. The freedom to help yourself, in other words. Freedom two is the freedom to help your neighbor by distributing copies to others. And freedom three is the freedom to help build your community by publishing improved versions so others can benefit from your work. If you have all these freedoms, the program is free software for you. Now, it's clear that in order for freedom one and freedom three to make sense, you've got to have the source code. Yes, theoretically it's possible. It's possible in extremis to study the binary and figure out how it works and patch it, but it's terribly hard. This is known as disassembly. It's so hard, people only do it when they're absolutely desperate. It's, you know, only if there's some important information in the program that you just have to get. Otherwise, it's easier to write your own program than figure out by disassembly what a certain program does. So people use this, for instance, to figure out how to control certain hardware. So realistically speaking, we have to decide that availability of the source code is a precondition for free software. Now, freedom zero, the freedom to run the program, is obvious. In addition, most software gives you that freedom. There are exceptions. There are programs that are particularly restricted. But most software will give you this freedom. In addition, legally, the way copyright law works, if you have freedoms 1, 2, and 3, it follows that you have freedom 0. So the freedoms that distinguish free software from most software are freedoms 1, 2, and 3. And therefore, I'll say more about them. Freedom 1 is the freedom to help yourself, the freedom to study the program and change it to suit your needs. This could mean fixing bugs, could mean adding features, it could mean porting it to a different computer system, it could mean translating the messages to Polish. Whatever change you want to make, you should be able to make. Who can take advantage of this freedom? Clearly, professional programmers know how to take advantage of this freedom directly, but not only they can take advantage. Any business that uses software can benefit from this freedom. Now, maybe there are no programmers in the company. Maybe their business is making clothing. Doesn't matter. If they want changes made, they can go to some programmer and say, how much will you charge to make these changes and when can you have it done? And if they don't like the answer, they can go to some other programmer and say, when can you have it done? Eventually, they can decide and commission somebody to make the changes they want. In fact, companies often value good support for the software they use, or at least they say they do. Anyone who values good support for software and is willing to pay for it can expect to get better software for their money, better support for their money with free software, because free software offers a free market for support. With a proprietary program, typically only the owner can offer support. So support is a monopoly. There may be a choice of different programs you could use to do the job, but once you've chosen a program, any one of them, support for it is a monopoly afterwards. So the support for these proprietary programs is typically lousy. They'll say, pay us and we'll let you report a bug. And if you do that, they'll say, in 6 months there will be an upgrade. Buy the upgrade and you'll see if the bug is fixed and which other bugs we've given you to replace it. But with free software, you can get fairly good support just from people on the net being helpful. You can post a message saying, I have a problem. The next day, you might get a solution in the mail, or you might not. If it's really important to you to get a solution, if your business depends on it, at that point, you can pay for support, and you will probably have a choice of support providers you can go to. If you don't like the job that one of them does, you can try another. In addition, anyone who appreciates security and privacy on the computer system can benefit from freedom number one. Because with free software, you can check what the program actually does. So if it has bugs, you might be able to find them. And if it has deliberate nasty features, you know, backdoors or surveillance, you might catch these. You could find out. With proprietary software, you can't tell what it does. You can only put blind faith in the developer, and they don't always deserve it. These nasty features do exist in commercial proprietary software. For instance, there was a version of Windows that would report to Microsoft whatever you had on your disk. There's also a suggestive and worrisome label, pair of labels called NSA Key 1 and NSA Key 2 somewhere in a piece of Windows. And people wonder what in the world those are. Are those a backdoor? Nobody knows. You see, the fact that they can keep secret from you what the program does gives them the idea that they can put in nasty features and get away with it. And of course, with free software, the fact that people might spot nasty features is a deterrent. They're not likely to try. They know they can't get away with it for long. So, you see, of course, you are not going to personally check all the software that you use because you don't have time. You have other things to do. But with our large community, various people are checking various parts for various reasons. And as a result, programmers will not think they can get away with inserting nasty features in their code. And of course, when we make mistakes, because every programmer makes mistakes, with free software, there's a better chance of finding them and fixing them. This is why security experts now recommend that you should stick to free software for security-related jobs. Because the free software packages have been checked by a lot of people. There's a basis for confidence that they actually work right. The proprietary programs have been checked by very few people. It's quite likely that they don't work right. And finally, any computer user can take advantage of Freedom One. You know, there are hard jobs and there are easy jobs. Most people are not going to learn the skills of a professional programmer who could do the big jobs, big changes. But anybody can learn enough to make the easy changes. And if you don't want to learn even that much because you are a people person and your strong point is in getting along with people and not in technology, well, that probably means you've got a bunch of friends. Some of them are probably programmers. So if you want to change in a certain program, you convince one of your friends to make the change for you. So everyone can take advantage of this freedom to study what the program does and change it to suit your needs. If you don't have this freedom, that causes practical material harm to society. It causes people to have to suffer with software that doesn't do what they need, that works badly for them, and is frustrating to use. I explained what that was like for the Xerox laser printer. We were prisoners of our software. That's what happens when you don't have Freedom One. It also causes psychosocial harm that affects people's morale, their enthusiasm for their work. You see, if you're trying to do your work and you're excited about it, you want to make progress, but you constantly have to struggle with gratuitously painful tools, and you're not allowed to improve them. You're just forced to suffer unnecessarily. It's going to be frustrating all the time. And people have a tendency to cope with this frustration by deciding they don't care anymore. And then they won't feel anything. But when that happens, it causes harm not only to them, but to society as a whole. So that is Freedom One, the freedom to help yourself by changing the program to suit your needs. Freedom Two is the freedom to help your neighbor by distributing copies to others. For beings that can think and have knowledge, sharing useful knowledge is a fundamental act of friendship. When these beings use computers, this act of friendship takes the form of sharing software. If a program has an owner who denies you Freedom 2 in order to establish a situation where each user has to pay to use the program, the result is practical material harm to society. The program is going to waste. You see, the fee to use the program is a financial disincentive discouraging the use of the program. Some users will say, all right, I'll pay, and they will use the program. And others will say, it's too much, never mind, I'll do without it. And every time someone without it, the program is going to waste. But the work it takes for any given level of quality is the same regardless of the number of users. So the same work is done, but only part of the benefit is obtained. The rest is deliberately inflicted waste. That's practical material harm. But because it's inflicted cooperating with each other, it causes psychosocial harm, which affects the spirit of goodwill, the willingness to help your neighbor, the most important resource. It's so important that the major religions are constantly encouraging it for years. When I was a kid, kindergarten, the teachers were trying to teach us the habit of sharing. They said, if you bring candy to school, you can't just keep it all yourself. You've got to share it with the other kids. They wanted us to think in terms of sharing. So what happens when powerful social institutions start saying, don't share with your neighbor, helping your neighbor is wrong? They're poisoning this vital resource. What happens when they say, if you help your neighbor, you're a pirate? They're saying that sharing with your neighbor is the moral equivalent of attacking a ship. I think that's a rather perverted idea of morality. And what happens when they start imposing harsh punishments on people who share with their neighbors? How much fear is it going to take to get people to stop sharing with their neighbors? I don't want to live in a society pervaded by that level of fear. I hope you don't. Now, the United States is the world leader today in stopping people from helping their neighbors, in trying to terrorize people who would share software. But the United States is not the first country to make a priority of stopping people from sharing useful information. The Soviet Union did that, and they may have imposed it here too. You can tell me, I guess. For instance, the Soviet Union used 5 methods to stamp out the unauthorized company, which was known as samizdat. One was guards watching all copying equipment to check what was being copied. Did they do that here too? To make sure that you couldn't do the unauthorized copying. And another was harsh punishments for anyone caught doing the unauthorized copying. In the Soviet Union, they could get sent to Siberia, not cyberspace. And then there, in order to help catch people, they solicited informers. They asked people to rat on their co-workers and their neighbors to the information police. And also to help catch people, they used collective responsibility. You're going to watch that group. If I catch any of them doing unauthorized copying, you are going to prison. So watch them hard. Did they do that here too? And there was propaganda starting from childhood to teach everyone that only a horrible enemy of the people would ever do this forbidden copy. Today, the United States is using all of these methods against forbidden copying. First, guards watching copying equipment. In a copy store, that's exactly what they do. They check what you're going to copy to stop you from doing forbidden copying. But human labor to watch your computer is too expensive. So instead, they have robot guards that go in your computer. And it's a crime to bypass these. And ironically, it's not a crime in Russia. And a company in Russia developed a program to do this. One of their programmers was arrested on a visit to the United States. It used to be that Americans had to worry about being arrested for outrageous reasons when they visited the Soviet Union. Now it's the reverse. Second, harsh punishments. Well, in the U.S. a few years ago, if you made copies of something and handed them out to your friends just to be nice, that was not a crime. It had never been a crime. Then they made it a felony. You can be put in prison for years in the U.S. just for sharing with your neighbors and getting nothing in return. And third, informers. In the U.S., there are ads on TV. There are ads in the Boston subways asking people to rat on their coworkers to the information police, which is known as the Business Software Alliance, an evil organization that should be put out of existence. And fourth, collective responsibility. In the U.S., this has been done by conscripting internet service providers, holding them responsible for whatever their customers post, unless they have an invariable procedure of removing anything within 2 weeks after a complaint. So at this point, if someone says that you are violating copyright on your website, you don't even get your day in court, you just get unplugged.